Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Romesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Hello, I'm Matt Jolly. This is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, a must-listen edition of PMQ's Unpacked. Are we due another Prime Minister? Simon Clarke seems to think so. How did Rishi Sunak get on? What did Keir Starmer make of it all? Patrick Maguire joins us while Tim Shipman has a lie down and tries to work out how he's ever going to finish his book. So Patrick Maguire joins me to pause the action live from the House of Commons to analyse the key exchanges in real time. And Lara Spirit rounds up the best of the rest so that you don't have to sit through them. That's coming up in our big thing. Before that, as it's Wednesday, we'll have Albert, Alice Thompson and Robert Crapton on whether the Tories have lost their minds and should we lose the Daily Post? And don't forget, if you like what you hear on the podcast, you can always listen to me live on Times Radio with Politics Without the Boring Bits for free on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. And we begin with Simon Clarke's karaoke favourite. All right, Simon. All right, Simon. I mean, it's been a while since we've had a new Prime Minister, so maybe Simon Clarke's got a point. Maybe we are due a new one. Simon Clarke calling for Rishi Sunak to go to try and turn things around. Well, when the news broke, my WhatsApps lit up with messages from MPs and ministers, because unlike the Scottish Government where...
WhatsApp deletion is a pre-bed ritual.
I kept mine before I went to bed last night. So what I thought I'd do is just walk you through some of the WhatsApps I've had overnight from various Tories about the idea from Simon Clarke that things would be better if Rishi Sunak resigned. Former Cabinet Minister, my view is that it is balmy to consider yet another change of leader. Completely balmy. There's an outpouring of fury against Simon Clarke on the Conservative MP WhatsApp group. Excellent. Not another former cabinet minister. So, there were a lot of them. Simon Clarke is well known for changing positions more frequently than the Kama Sutra. During the May years, he flip-flopped three times in 1 week on her Brexit deal. He'll no doubt be four square behind the PM in a few months' time. Excellent. Then this from a current cabinet minister, somebody who's currently in the cabinet. My view is that he, Simon Clarke, is a poor man's Jeff Hoon. Though, to be fair, Jeff is a very much more considerable figure. This is a reference to the fact, I think it's 15 years almost to the day when Jeff Hoon and Patricia Hewitt launched a coup against Gordon Brown to try and stop him leading the Labour Party into the general election. Of course, the coup didn't work, but the election didn't go very well either. now, here's a message someone sent me. I don't know if you've seen this. Liz Truss, Simon Clarke launching something called PopCon. PopCon. Sounds like the world's worst music festival. PopCon. It's a group called Popular Conservatism. Somebody says, I honestly thought when I saw that Popular Conservative post, it was a piss take. Who the hell would want her back? She managed to all... she managed to off and sack all the incompetent MPs in a few short weeks with her band of inepts. Some of those tits were gonged for it as well. Apologies about the language. I'm merely quoting elected members of the House of Commons. And here's another one. This is someone who's close to Liz Truss, sat in Liz Truss's cabinet next to Simon Clark on whether they're going to join the call for Rishi Sunak to go. I could tell you that the answer is absolutely not. It's not in anyone's interest, nor is it in the national interest to have a literature contest now. And then they followed that up by saying that should have been leadership contest, not literature contest. Excuse any other typos. I'm on hands-free. Yes. We can add spelling to the list of skills needed to be in Liz Truss's cabinet. Here's another MP. Loads and loads of messages saying there were lots of messages. They said they think there will be more calls for Sunak to go in the coming days. Drip, 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 they called it. They said this is Gove and Harper's fault. That's Michael Gove and Mark Harper. They said in October 2022, they were the henchmen to kill off Liz and co. It sounds like get your own back time. It's all completely sane. It's all completely sane. Another MP says it's bloody stupid. Another one says it's crazy. Bonkers, says another one. Former cabinet minister says the trouble with the cult of youth in modern politics is that you get a lot of juvenilia. Nice. Former minister, madness. The final descent of this party into a fratricidal cult of warring tribes of posturing populists, putting ideology ahead of governing in the mainstream interest. It's beyond parody. The WhatsApps just keep coming. They just keep coming. Here's another one. This is from a former minister. Ain't on standby on the bleeper. This is self-indulgence of the highest order. Alternatively, the word come to mind. Very close there. I think we got away with that one. Another MP, on a serious note, there will not be enough letters or support to get rid of Rishi, as most of us are supporting him. It's just the usual ASCs doing what they always do when they are out of the spotlight. I thought, what is this? What's this? It's another Tory grouping. What are the ASCs, I asked. They replied, attention-seeking... Do get in touch in all the usual ways. Any MPs, Tory MPs who are listening, always good to hear from you.
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton.
And they're both here and they're both in Burgundy.
Yeah, we try to match every week
now.
Yeah,
very important that. Have you had your colours done? I had my colours done on the show.
Are you autumn or spring?
She was leaning towards autumn. We only gave her 10 minutes and really she likes to have 2 hours.
And is that your skin tone that goes?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my dad had it done. Is it Barbara Follett used to do it for the Labour Party?
Yeah.
Colour me something.
Yeah.
And he had grey hair and blue eyes and she told him he was a winter person.
Yeah.
So that's clever, isn't it?
Yeah. We could do that as a piece.
Yeah. She had white hair, but was autumnal.
Oh, interesting.
Apparently it's coming back. It's because of the TikTokers.
Mm. Oh, okay.
It's only a matter of time before you
have it. All my children want to have it done, which is kind of weird, because I thought it was my grand
type. Very, 80s thing. Mm. Yeah, yeah, but anyway, there we are. But anyway, you both look lovely.
Thanks, mate. So do you.
Thanks, pal. Let's talk about Simon Clark. Poor Simon Clark. Sir Simon Clark, if you don't mind. Knighted by Liz Truss for his role in her government. He's come out and said that the Tories are heading for disaster. They will be massacred at the general election unless they... find a new leader who shares the instincts of the party. Mm. Have the Tories completely lost the plot, Alice?
Well, I think he has. I think the problem is that whatever leader they have, they are probably going to do pretty badly in the polls. And I think actually, by changing leader, I think people really will have had enough, because by then you've gone through five leaders and you need to have, you do need to have an election. People need to feel that they are voting for the Prime Minister at a certain stage rather than it just being an internal decision. So I think I would say, yes, he has. I would say he was all by himself, actually. And I think there are quite a lot of Tories who are so worried about their seats that they're trying to see just how many seats, sort of how many votes they can cling on to. They don't really care if the Tories get in or not. It's all about them, and I suggest they should just go off and look for another job.
But that isn't this isn't the way to cling on to votes, is it? I mean, he's right about the first part. The Tories are heading for electoral disaster, but he's not right about the second part, because I think it'd be an even bigger disaster if they replace Sunak.
You have to wonder about the mentality of some of them, that it took the seat-by-seat breakdown, this MRP YouGov poll that was in the Telegraph last week, apparently commissioned by some secret organisation that doesn't actually exist, which Simon Clark seems to be in cahoots with. Only when they saw on the map that their seat had changed colour did they start worrying. Whereas everyone else has been able to see for the last 12 months that the Labour Party have had a 20-point lead.
Yeah, they're not very good at maths, are they? Because you could work it out quite quickly.
So they just think that everyone else was going to lose their seat and they...
I think a lot of MPs do think that. Yeah,
incumbency.
And there's a myth of the personal vote. Somebody did a survey once on the power of the... You could have the best MP ever, nicest person, fantastic constituency MP, surgeries every day of the week, and it's worth about 500 votes. But of course, it's a fallacy, isn't it?
What the Lib Dems said a lot in the run-up to 2015, wasn't it? So, where we've got MPs and we're dug in and we've got the personal vote.
It's a shame, really, because the personal vote kind of ought to exist, but it doesn't, really. They probably were all fooling themselves.
But Rishi Sunak now, I mean, it's very difficult for him because he's trying to get on, he's trying to appease everybody at the moment. And that you can see that. He's going from one side to the other of the party constantly. And they've got this new popcorn group, which is popular conservatism. But it does sound like popcorn. It sounds like something sort of frivolous, jokey, bit sweet, bit salty, not really doing very much.
I thought it was like one of those like conventions where people sort of dress up as pop stars, or maybe you dress up as Liz Truss. Maybe that's the...
And Danny made the point in his column today, didn't he, about the tradition of the Labour Party has been the party of protest rather than government, and you're looking for traitors everywhere and all the rest of it. And now the Conservative Party is taking on that mantle.
Yeah,
doesn't seem to care about government. Yeah. Happens occasionally, and occasionally the Labour Party gets its act together and presents a reasonable alternative, and that seems to be what's happening.
Well,
this
Labour
time.
Labour is so disciplined at the moment, aren't they? I mean, they're not giving away any spending plans.
And although Sunak's been you could say he's been reasonably competent, you can't sell yourself as the party of competence if the other party is looking competent and if your own people are constantly undermining it.
And it just adds to the sense of, to the extent that people are following all these things, it adds to the sense of it just being a joke, that it's just...
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to Alice outside, I know people who are kind of hardened Tory voters who've got no intention of voting Tory. They just think they'd be idiots to vote Conservative. It's just not... They're not going to do it this time. I mean, they will again in the future, no
doubt.
But
even ones who want to, their reasoning for not voting Tory is that they're such a rabble and such a mess that they need to get their act together. They need a bit of time in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite dangerous for them because they're going to find that the people who really would normally vote for them, come what may, are actually trying to do it for their benefit.
And the danger is that there is demographics, isn't it? Mm. Because we all know that young people are vanishingly small, isn't it? People under 25. I mean, maybe people, as they grow up, they're going to turn towards the Tories, but they've got a very, very elderly electorate.
And each election is always that crossing point, isn't it, where you're suddenly more likely to vote Tory than Labour.
Yeah.
I think it did come down in 2019, but it had been getting older and older. Uh-huh. So if we were being constructive then, if not removing the leader, what could Rishi Sunak do over the next 9 months? Not, I think, winning a majority seems unlikely on current form. But what could he do to stem the losses?
Well, we were just talking
losses?
Again, so we have done a lot of prep, haven't we?
Yeah, very good.
Well,
yeah.
We do work it out. We were
otherwise
saying,
known as the chat by the lift.
Yeah, exactly, with coffee. We were saying that we think that the sewage and the water companies is a big issue. It's particularly big in the West Country. But it's those sort of issues. It's things that people really care about. They don't care about Rwanda. They do care about immigration, and they really care, actually, I think, about things like sewage. They cared about post office. They just want things to be efficient and sorted. And if Rishi Sunak could just sound as if he was going to sort things out a bit more and actually take it all seriously and stop looking at his own party and start looking at what's wrong with the country, I think he'd have more of a chance.
When I was in Westminster last week, I bumped into a minister. He's not a health minister. We were sort of chatting. They were saying there's supposed to be, at some point, the government's got a big dentist plan coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been coming just around the corner for months. And a couple of weeks ago, the Labour Party ended up having a debate in the Commons just to sort of force the issue. And it was why they then started talking about brushing your teeth, children and all that stuff. And they're like, why? Yeah, the dentist thing is having massive cuts. The Lib Dems are really weaponising it in lots of places. You can't get a dentist appointment.
Yeah.
So they've actually got a thing and it's just sort of being dragged in. And by the time they get there, everyone else will have announced their dentist plan.
Yeah.
And it'll look like they've been dragged to it kicking and screaming rather than sort of getting ahead of it. Just to identify, five things which are annoying people.
Well,
sewage, dentists, potholes, and just hammer away at that. That if all else fails,
and transport. So actually, railway lines.
And maybe rather than trying to constantly pander to the right, you could think possibly about trying to outflank the Labour Party to its left, which would be water, in my view. I mean, that's the one that when you're talking to people, cuts across every single party affiliation. You get people are just furious about it. Now, I'm not suggesting that he should announce the renationalisation of the water industry, but he might be. He might want to do something radical, which makes the Labour Party look a bit sort of stodgy and centrist.
Well, one thing he could do, I was just talking to Kate Osborne earlier, the Labour MP. She was saying that she'd like Keir Starmer to recommit to nationalising the Royal Mail. You know, the Royal Mail seems to be now wants to cut back on deliveries so that they can pay the themselves more bonuses and that sort of thing. Well, Rishi Sunak announced he's nationalising the Royal Mail. What will Keir Starmer do about that? It's probably not what they're talking about down the dog and duck, but people do get cross about the posts and.
Yeah, I think they I think the post office now has got so much kind of scrutiny on it that it, now is the time to look at it and to say what you're going to do and
but I think
just have a plan.
People also know that the nature of that industry is changing rapidly in terms of, you know, just the volume of letters and how parcels are delivered and so forth. Whereas
I just don't understand how they've managed to lose the market to all the other people to deliver your Amazon deliveries.
Well, that was the point. It's actually, they could have just flipped, couldn't they, very quickly into delivering all our Christmas parcels. I mean, God, we have something through the door every day, but it's not a letter.
Exactly.
Dog mess.
It's dog mess. Yeah, well, we've got to get onto dog mess in a minute, haven't we?
Well, it's not
human
dog mess.
Excrement,
it might be worse,
isn't it?
Okay, let's talk. So, as a result, again,
we've gone effortlessly from one subject to the next.
We are segueing. Just like Lembit Opik. He used to like a segue, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I love a segue. It's a good word, isn't it?
That's a niche. Niche radio / Lib Dem reference. That's what I'm here for. So we've talked a lot about councils struggling to, you know, balance the books and going bust and warnings of more and more councils going that way. Somerset Council is in particular trouble because it used to be county council and district councils. It was in financial trouble, so they merged them into a unitary, which just seems to have pooled their financial trouble rather than their resources. They're now planning to close all 25 public toilets.
Of which I think I've used quite a few of those because I'm on the Devon Somerset border and I'm a real public toilet
user. Is it like collecting? What do you do when you go to Scotland? You collect Monroe's.
Monroe bagging.
Monroe bagging. You're bagging toilets.
Or people who go to all 92 football clubs. And
Have you been to all of Somerset's 25 toilets?
I can't believe there's only 25 in Somerset.
Well, I think that's probably a sign of how much they've been cut back by already.
I mean, that's extraordinary.
Exmoor has quite a few of them, I think.
They need to save £100 million. It's been estimated that the UK has lost 50% of its public toilets in the past decade. Does it reach a point where councils are cutting back so much, sort of they don't really exist anymore? They're doing the absolute bare bones of the legal obligation.
You want them to clean the streets first, I guess, and after that you want public toilet provision would be kind of next on the list of pretty basic...
Yeah.
Minimum service, wouldn't
it? Yeah, and the rubbish. So actually, I think Somerset's got a real problem. Yeah, they're picking rubbish up three times, once every 3 weeks rather than three times a week.
And of course, if you had closed the public toilets, that adds to the rubbish problem, as I found out locally in East London.
Because we know that you're a litter picker.
Yeah, I do that. But it's stopped now for the autumn and winter, but it resumes in the summer, and I do that some Sundays.
I didn't realise you were only seasonal.
We're only seasonal because the park is not really... It doesn't get particularly badly littered in the autumn and winter, but it does get heavy use in the summer, and heavy use from people who want to go to the lavatory, not always where they should do. There are lavatories available, actually, but they're often locked or vandalised or out of action. And some of the stuff you find in the more wooded areas is indescribable. I mean, is the least of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That is the problem, isn't it? Is that if you shut all the public toilets, then people just go elsewhere. And then that is just really unpleasant.
It's what happened during lockdown, because I live right in the park, and they made the mistake of opening the pubs for takeaway a couple of months before they opened the loos. Mm. So my front yard just became vast public lavatory for a while. People attempting to do stuff other than just urinate. In my garden.
Have you noticed that Robert doesn't use the word toilet, do you?
No, he's...
What did I say? Lavatory.
Lavatory and loo.
That's Times Star, isn't it? Times House Star.
Yeah.
Did you ever catch them?
I found one guy who was in the act of lowering his trousers between the two, between my recycling bin and my dustbin. And I've got a little sort of forecourt thing. And he looked at me sheepishly and stood up to rebutton his trousers and said, "Oh, no, don't worry, I'm not going to." And I said, "I know you're not, mate." On your way.
Wow.
You're not doing that.
And, but it is very unfair on elderly people, or if you've got young children, or there's so many, I mean, you know, a lot of women, that it's really difficult if there's nowhere to go to the loo and you have to kind of try and find a shop and then you're not wanted.
I remember when my son was small, we had this issue and you ended up going into a lot of pubs and sort of craving the indulgence of the
landlord.
Yeah. I'm sorry,
John. Children, older people, people with disabilities and medical conditions. You know, so it's not just like a bit funny. It's like
it's really basic.
Yeah. And it stops them going out. So actually, you know, it's limiting people's lives if they can't go out and there isn't anywhere they can go.
Yeah, and we just ought to be able to do it, didn't we? As a provider,
But it's one of those things, sort of public faith in in the public realm.
It's one of those sort of markers of civilization. You know, how you treat the weakest members of society, how you treat old people, and whether you can provide somewhere for people to go to the loo.
It's the same with water fountains. So you kind of think if they kept the water fountains, you kept the public loos, then you have that kind of infrastructure that you can get on with your life.
All these Gen Zers wouldn't be able to be carrying around 2 litre containers of water at all times.
Yeah, which take them about half an hour to fill at the water coolers here. Yeah. You don't have a water cooler moment anymore. You have a water cooler.
Just start a watch filling up 2 litres of water.
Exactly.
In case they get dehydrated on the way back to their desk.
That's right.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I imagine other councils will be following suit on that and whether or not they could do anything about it. Finally, dressing up. You like dressing up, don't you?
I do. I mean, I do. I think most people like dressing up. A lot of men like dressing up. I wrote a column about that. And I do it a lot for work. But if you think about it, I thought about every single major component of the British establishment. What unites them all, House of Lords, the church, the military, the royals, the judiciary, the city with the guilds and so on. It's all about the dressing up box, isn't it? You think about
the tights.
Yeah.
Wigs.
And it's all very camp. And we say we're good at pageantry. Well, we are, aren't we? But it's not just the royals. It's everything.
And it's quite a male thing.
It's really male, because I don't actually like, I hate that kind of dressing up party. When they give you a theme, I just think.
Yeah, and they're going on any Saturday night of the week. You have hundreds and hundreds of those in any suburban close you care to look at.
Would
be a toga party or a Vickers and Tarts party. Yeah. And it's more the men getting into it.
It's always the men. That's that terrible point in Legally Blonde. You remember that when the film when Reese Witherspoon goes in with her bunny outfit and no one else is dressing up? And that is always going to be me. I'm so terrified that I'm going to go.
Isn't Bridget Jones?
Oh, and Bridget Jones is. Yeah. They're two different ones, aren't they, when they both have them? Yeah,
yeah. My friend used to do that. He used to tell everyone he was having a party and he'd tell one person that it was fancy dress and then some poor guy would just turn up as Henry VIII or something. It was his thing. I was very funny.
Well, I scarred my daughter from doing it. So we don't do it in our family because it was World Book Day when she was 5. I took her in on the wrong day and she dressed up as Mrs. Twit.
Yeah.
And she had to spend the whole day at school in dressing up. And then, so she won't do it. So most of the family now don't really dress up.
There's part of me that really hates forced fun. But then whenever, if I do go to a fancy dress, I do go for it.
Anyway, we've seen you, and you had a very good Theresa May, as we saw.
Well, obviously, Theresa May, still darling out on that one.
Yeah. Elton John, you mentioned.
Yeah, I've done Elton John, Just up Elton John and Timmy Mallet.
Right.
But is that because you like all the makeup? Yeah.
Not especially the makeup.
Yeah. I always think when I see men in TV studios, they do actually quite like having their hair and makeup done, don't they?
Yeah. And it's all those medics at university going
around. I like having makeup done to go on telly, because they always tell me I've got good skin.
Well, you have, because of your moisturising regime.
I moisturise every day.
Yeah.
Well, I do everything I'm told to do by the times two in weekends.
And the dressing up thing was because of Andy Murray
dressing up
as Dumbledore in a very sort of rather restrained, slightly douce, dare I say, Scottish manner with just a sort of pointy hat and a waistcoat. Mm. But he was doing it at 5:30 in the morning to entertain his 3 daughters.
Yes.
And so respect to him for doing that.
He put a witch's hat on and a waistcoat.
Mm.
Well, it's like a wizard's hat.
A wizard,
very good. But you won't be doing that, Alice.
Well, I thought the 5:30 in the morning was pretty good. I don't think my children woke me up at 5:30 in the morning.
You must have dressed up in something for the times.
Yeah, but not 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I've done quite a lot. But mine was more, I was at a nudist camp. We had to dress down for that, I think. But I have, I have done, I once did a Rolls Royce piece when I was dressed up as sort of, 1950s headscarf, which I quite like. Yeah, that was quite good, actually. I wasn't quite going to say that, but it was like that. I quite enjoyed that one.
Thanks, Robert, says Lisa. Breakfast ruined. She talked about toilets.
Sorry, Lisa.
Then Lisa goes on to say, talking of public urinating, witnessed a man this morning spraying a neighbour's doorstep. So Lisa, you can't complain and then offer up your own.
And you should have had your breakfast by 10 to 11 in the morning as well, Lisa.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton. Of course, you can read them in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription at thetimes.co.uk. Up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire. Yeah.
Yes, it's been a long time. It's been ages.
It really
ages
has.
Since you've been here.
I cannot remember the last time. And I used to set by my watch and measure my life by these appearances on PMQ.
So Tim Shipman's off to finally finish his book. That seems to be the explanation, the long-awaited
third volume in the trilogy. Actually, I've just started writing a book, as some listeners probably don't know. So it's obligatory on PMQs.
Somebody who is doing this slot has to be also simultaneously writing.
You have to be a sort of slightly ragged looking man with a beard and a book project that's slightly too ambitious.
Now, people are very excited about the prospect of you bringing us a Lindsay Hoyle impression. Oh. We've had a lot of Lindsay Hoyle in recent weeks.
We have, haven't we?
Would you like, for the benefit of newer listeners, your trademark Lindsay Hoyle? It all dates back to
2020.
It's a long time Cox, ago. The popular DJ, once said that Lindsay Hoyle had the vibe of a woodwork teacher.
Yeah, an overworked, put upon woodwork teacher. And so you've just got to imagine yourself in a dingy tech building at a, you know, Northern Comprehensive. And, you know, your hand strays a little bit and you just hear, "Don't touch the lathe. I've told you once, don't touch the lathe." That's more Paul Mason, actually.
What about Paul Waugh? That's a big question. Paul Waugh.
Chief political commentator of the I newspaper.
Yes, who we were told just...
So that's a Diet Coke, not a...
cracking open a can.
Cracking open a tinny to
get
celebrate.
Get a tinny on the go. Paul Waugh, chief political commentator of the I, was due on Times Radio tonight with John Pienaar and friends. But apparently he has pulled out.
He has been approached by Labour members in Rochdale, according to the... and to several outlets now, to run as their candidate. Paul is from Rochdale, fan of Rochdale FC. There are some of them still left. It's interesting, though. Here's some interesting trivia for listeners of a certain age. The Liberals stood both Robin Day and Ludovic Kennedy, who was a big human rights activist and journalist, in Rochdale.
Robin Day?
Yeah, Robin Day.
What, the Robin
the
Day?
The Robin Day.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was big mates with Jeremy Thorpe at the Oxford Union. When they were both undergrads.
I had no idea.
There you go.
Before we go to the House of Commons to the start of PMQs as well, are you across Lee Anderson's latest?
What, Lee Anderson said he should have voted the Rwanda bill, and if they are interested, he will do the job again.
Yes, so he's written for The Telegraph. I don't know what's going on at The Telegraph. So they've had simultaneously Simon Clark calling for Rishi Sunak to resign. Now, Lee Anderson, who last week resigned from his job as deputy Tory chairman to vote against the government's Rwanda bill. He then didn't vote against the government's Rwanda bill. He abstained. He says now he should have been brave and voted with the government.
And kept his job.
Like his old job as deputy chairman back. Please. There we are. Right, are we ready to go to the House of Commons? Keir Starmer has got obviously quite a lot to go at today. How many interventions from Keir Starmer? How many interventions from Lindsay Hoyle?
I suspect we're going to hear a lot about Tory chaos from Keir Starmer today, I hear.
Is that what the line?
The word on the grapevine.
Right, here we go then. Let's go live to the House of Commons. This is question number one from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister's had quite a week, from endlessly fighting with his own MPs to collapsing in laughter when he was asked by a member of the public about NHS waiting lists. So I was glad to hear that he managed to take some time off.
Victoria Atkins can I just said he's shaking her head. Oh, it's Lindsay Hall already.
I wanted to the Prime Minister. I'm certainly going to hear the Leader of the Opposition. Those people who don't want to hear, they can certainly leave. Because that's who it's going to be, so get it in order. Some of you are wanting to catch my eye again. It's not a good way to do it.
That has to be a record. Yes.
Mr. Speaker, I love this quaint tradition where the more they slag him off behind his back, the later they cheer in here. Keep it going.
The ladle? The ladle they cheer.
And also, for this side, you can have a joint cup of tea. Come on.
Mr. Speaker, I was glad to see that he managed to get some time off yesterday afternoon to kick back, relax, and accidentally record a candid video for Nigel Farage. The only thing missing from that punishing schedule is any sort of governing or leadership. So was he surprised to see one of his own MPs say that he doesn't get what Britain needs and he's not listening to what people want?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about what Britain needs, what Britain wants, what Britain values. This from a man who takes the knee, Mr. Speaker, who wanted to abolish the monarchy, who still doesn't know what a woman is, and who just this week, one of his front benchers said that they'd back teaching divisive white privilege in our schools, Mr. Speaker. Looking at his record, it's crystal clear which one of us doesn't get Britain's values.
Wow. Right, there's a lot to unpack there, Patrick McGuire. Well, so we'll jump in there, as we always do. If you haven't previously joined us on PMQ's Unpacked, we pause the action to explain what is going on. Now, to completely rewind, what triggered Keir Starmer being interrupted by Lindsay Hoyle was his reference to the laughing at the face of NHS waiting lists, because there was this video that was posted online last week, but all was not
as it seemed. All was not as it seemed, because it was a video taken by an off-duty Sky News cameraman. I love the idea that if you're a Sky News cameraman, you carry your warrant card, just in case you need to film
something. You could perform a citizen's video clip.
Well, that is exactly what happened. The Prime Minister was on a walkabout. He was talking to a member of the public about waiting lists, an elderly woman who was talking about her daughter's experience of NHS waiting lists. And the woman said, you could make it all go back to how it was, to which Rishi Sunak made a hearty chuckle and in the first cut of the video appeared to then turn his back and walk away. A longer cut of the video from an alternative angle saw that Rishi Sunak chuckled, turned around and walked up the street with the woman in question. So if you were being a bit po-faced about it, and indeed lots of journalists were very po-faced about this video in the aftermath of it, and I shouldn't say po-faced because it raises an interesting question ahead of an election year that will be fought online, is Keir Starmer using a version of events there to attack the Prime Minister, given that this was a video that was cut, a lot of people say, misleadingly? Is he amplifying misinformation there?
That's a good question. Now, then he made this joke about taking time out of his busy schedule to record a clip for Nigel Farage. This is slightly peculiar. We're going to talk about it a bit later. This slightly peculiar website where you can go online and put your name in or the name of someone else, and then they get a personalised video from Rishi Sunak.
In which he says, I share your priorities, immigration's too high, taxes have to come down.
Yeah, and the Guido Fawkes website got one for Nigel Farage.
Hi Nigel, like you, I think immigration levels are too high.
But we've tried to do one for me, and he didn't record the name Matt. When he sat there, presumably with like a book of children's names. Hello Aaron, hello Adam, hello Alan. Hello, Brian. Hello, Barry. Hello, Colin. Hello. Apparently didn't get to Matt.
But it's amazing. Nobody in the room, given this was Rishi Sunak's family home in North Yorkshire, no aide said, maybe don't do Nigel because...
Or nobody said, you're the Prime Minister. Surely you've got something better to do than spend your weekend going, hello, Simon. Hello, Stephen. Hello, Terry. Hello, Veronica. It's quite extraordinary. Then we were talking about misinformation or certainly misinterpreting of events, or, you know, Rishi Sunak in that answer I mean, normally that's the sort of thing he saves to a bit later on when we had his book to rear and you're the friends of the terrorists and all that. Really leaning in. Abolish the monarchy, takes the knee, doesn't know what a woman is. Somebody wants to teach white privilege. That's proper old school dirt throwing, isn't it?
Well, yeah. The kindest thing you could say about that line is that the Tories know how they want to attack Keir Starmer. That's not to cast any judgment on its effectiveness or likelihood to move the polls, but we have had over the past couple of weeks a very clear line of attack from Rishi Sunak on Keir Starmer, which is to say you're a lefty lawyer who sides with people who contravene British values in X number of ways, be that on culture or on national security. The problem is, in the week where Keir Starmer has thrown his arms around the RNLI and the National Trust, and you know, is there any given opportunity pictured in camouflage fatigues with British troops? It's trickier to make that stick.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, if we're already there at this stage, who knows we're going to be after six questions. Let's go back to the House of Commons. It's PMQ's Unpacked. Question two from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Slater. He spouts so much nonsense, no wonder they're giving up on him. And even now, as his government crumbles around him and his own MPs point out he's out of touch, got no plan for growth, crime or building houses, the Prime Minister is sticking to his one-man Pollyanna show. Everything's fine. People should be grateful to him. The trouble is, no one's buying it. Does he actually understand why his own MPs say he doesn't understand Britain and that he is an obstacle to recovery?
Prime Minister.
Again, Mr. Speaker, he calls it nonsense, but these are his positions, Mr. Speaker. Right, and he doesn't want to talk about it, but this is the fact. He chose to represent a now proscribed terrorist group, Mr. Speaker. He chose to campaign against the deportation of foreign national offenders, Mr. Speaker, just like he chose to serve the Right Honourable Member for Islington North, Mr. Speaker. That's his record, those are his values, and that is exactly how he should be judged.
Why isn't Keir Starmer just reading out word for word what Simon Clark said in the Telegraph today? And so he's sort of burying it under generalisations rather than using specifics.
And also, what I thought when I heard his first question is it was almost as if Keir Starmer was doing a review of what was funny on Twitter yesterday, rather than saying... The Prime Minister's former deputy at the Treasury, who knows him very well, has just said this. What does he say to that? Well, as you say, it's a bit of a melange, isn't it? I thought it was interesting again that rejoinder from Rishi Sunak, by the way, attacking Keir Starmer on his legal career. I wrote about this in the Times a couple of weeks ago and shared the maybe surprising view of some people in Keir Starmer's inner circle that they have all the rebuttals to this day need, that it won't wash with the public. Not a few universities shared at the top of the Labour Party. Shadow Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood thinks it's very silly that the Labour Party make a lot of his record as a lawyer, because you set yourself up for these attacks if you say I'm Mr. I prosecuted X or did all of the things you like. Inevitably, they'll come back with that. But yeah, you'd expect to hear a little bit more direct attacks.
Yeah.
From Keir
You've
Starmer
got material
today.
There. Read out what a former cabinet colleague has said about the Prime Minister today. Concrete quote. What's your response to that?
I guess the difficult thing is that Rishi Sunak got a huge cheer when he walked in. Mm. You had basically the entire Parliamentary Conservative Party, including natural allies of Simon Clarke on the right, lining up on WhatsApp last night to say this is stupid.
So you don't want to galvanise them necessarily.
Yeah, so you don't want to say, what do you think of Simon Clarke, and have the entire mass of Tory MPs say he's a moron.
Yeah. Lots of you getting in touch saying, where's the question, says Lee. It's a good point. I thought, what did he actually say? Does he understand why his own MPs say he doesn't understand Britain, was the last question. Who's the nodding person on Sunak's left? We'll have a look at that. I think that's Victoria Atkins, the health secretary. My favourite bit of reaction so far is Tom's been in touch. Says, I never miss PMQ's Unpacked on the YouTube, but I always mute the sound when the politicians are talking in brain because I can't stand it anymore. So I just listen to your commentary, even though I don't really know what you're commenting on. Why not? We'll take it. If you want to watch along, you can watch along on the YouTube channel. Just go to the YouTube, search Tom's Radio. We are live there right now. Patrick McGuire's with me. Let's go back to the House of Commons. Question number three from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, in 2008, I was the Director of Public Prosecutions, putting terrorists and murderers in jail. He was making millions betting on the misery of working people during the financial crisis. And we've seen this story time and time again with this lot. Party first, country second, safely ensconced in Westminster, they get down to the real business of fighting each other to death. The country forced to endure their division and chaos, the longest episode of EastEnders ever put to film. Meanwhile, this week we discover that Britain is going to be the only major economy that no longer makes its own steel. That the government is handing out £500 million to make 3,000 steelworkers redundant. And that the parents of thousands are being told that his free childcare promise is nothing but a mirage. Isn't he embarrassed that the Tory party is yet again entirely focused on itself?
Mr. Speaker, yet more sniping from the sidelines. Yeah, you can see exactly why his butterer hired him in the first place. But he wants to talk about these things. Even his own party are now realising that he simply doesn't have a plan for this country, Mr. Speaker. The member for Dagenham and Rainham said it's difficult to identify the purpose of his leadership. And long-time celebrity backer Steve Coogan recently said he licks his finger, sticks it in the air, and just sees which way the wind is blowing. Even Labour Party know, Mr. Speaker, he's not a leader, he is a human weather vane.
Yeah! Human weather vane, that's a better... Well, it's the sort of thing we heard from... Didn't Boris Johnson used to call him a human weather vane?
No, he used to call him a useless human bollard.
Oh, yes.
Different kind of street furniture, I'm afraid.
There was a huge amount in that. Keir Starmer opened with the accusation that Rishi Sunak was making millions betting off the misery of working people during the financial crisis. And that is exactly what Labour, senior Labour advisers threatened when I said to them a couple of weeks ago, what do you think of all these attacks on Keir Starmer's legal career? They said, well, if you want to get into CVs, let's talk about what Rishi Sunak was doing while Keir Starmer was Director of Public Prosecutions. And that apparently is their charge, that he was betting against the country in the city. Rishi Sunak coming back just as hard, reminding people again of Keir Starmer's work for that now proscribed Islamist group.
But Keir Starmer tried to throw a load in there. There was a very odd EastEnders reference. 13 years of division and chaos. Like an extra lot. Not, well, EastEnders have been going for longer than 13 years. Then he talked about the steel industry from last week, which is quite complicated. And it's not entirely clear how the steel industry would fit with Labour's net zero plans. Then the childcare policy, which is an interesting, you know, area to go at, and the fact that, you know, it's a flagship policy, which is quite popular, but doesn't seem to be working. But then it all sort of just gets lost in sort of mush.
Yeah, I mean, within that question, there were probably six questions that you could have strung out. Weirdly, I thought, you know, in line with what you were saying earlier about Keir Starmer's failure to use the Simon Clarke thing as effectively as he could have done, you had a very good example of quoting words at people directly and pithily from Rishi Sunak there, quoting the words of John Cruddas, the senior Labour MP and former policy chief of the party, saying Keir Starmer basically doesn't have a philosophy, and of Steve Coogan, who, never a great fan of Keir Starmer, but big fan of the Labour Party historically, saying he just sticks his finger in the wind. And because those are two very different people, John Cruddas and Steve Coogan, I won't now go on a tangent about how they're actually second-generation Irish immigrants and have a lot in common. it's very effective. Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. You almost want Keir Starmer
read
to have said...
Quote. People say, yeah, just yeah. Read out the quote, because it's much harder to rebut. Obviously, it's harder for Keir Starmer to rebut, because he's not facing the questions. We're not scoring points, but to be clear, Boris Johnson twice called...
Over him a human weather vane.
Called him a human weather vane. On the 30th of March 2022... he's just changed position. We do at least expect some consistency from this human weather vane. And then in January 2021, he said, I must say, the whole experience of listening to him over the past few months has been like watching a weather vane spinning round and round, depending on where the breezes are blowing.
But that is quite a powerful criticism of Keir Starmer. And again, people at the top of the Labour Party privately acknowledged
that this is difficult. Keir Starmer is not as good at other people as explaining why his opinions on things have changed.
You can see a sort of party political broadcast of him as a weather vane, and you know he was in favour of nationalisation, then he wasn't.
Well, you just play clips of him saying the opposite things.
Right, I'm slightly conscious of time because Patrick's here. We've gone on quite a long time. Let's all that biographical detail of John Cruddas. Let's go back to the House of Commons, though. This is question number four.
It's not the sidelines, it's behind him that the fire's coming in, Mr. Speaker. And he can try and blame the Labour Party all he wants. The difference is, I've changed my party, he's bullied by his party. And has he found the time in his busy schedule to work out why thousands of parents are being told by their nurseries that they won't get free childcare that he promised them?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, let's see what his party is offering the country. It's right. So we all know, Mr. Speaker, he doesn't have many ideas for our country.
I'm going to hear the Prime Minister.
He doesn't have many, but one thing we do know, Mr. Speaker, is that
you don't want to push it, do you?
Lindsay Hoyle again.
Do you know that he's committed to his 2030 decarbonisation promise, Mr. Speaker, which they say will cost £28 billion. But I was reading about it this week. He says he's changed the party. One of his team called it an albatross hanging around their neck. That might have been the Shadow Chancellor, maybe, Mr. Speaker. But he said they're doubling down on it. All this ahead of a crunch meeting, we're told, this week, for them to work out how they're going to pay for it. I can save them some time because we all know the answer. Higher taxes for the British people.
I feel like this whole episode of PMQs is like when people have those words on a fridge.
You just move them around. And they make a semblance of sense, but it's not a proper sentence.
It's not really a real thing. Why has Keir Starmer gone back to asking about childcare again? And then having not really set that up or explained the issue or put himself on the side of parents anyway, he's just got to say, oh, it's about your childcare thing. Is that working? And then he's ended up talking about greed. I feel like I'm going mad.
The way this was explained to me just as PMQs began, as Keir Starmer's approach, that is, was we're going on the chaos with a little bit of childcare. I didn't realise that was a description of their writing style.
Keir Starmer had a line there, clearly a line written to land like a soccer punch. I've changed my party, he is bullied by his. It's very close to I lead my party, he follows his, which Tony Blair landed against John Major in 1995. About a year after he became leader, and all hell broke loose in the House of Commons. And actually, Betty Boothroyd had to intervene to calm things down. But if that was supposed to be the killer line, he completely fluffed it.
He should have just quoted it directly.
Yeah.
Because he did, during the budget recently, or was it a PMQs? Either way, he quoted John Smith on Norman Lamont saying Richard Sunak was the man with the reverse Midas touch.
Yeah.
So he's not averse to quoting things directly, but maybe the delivery would have failed him anyway.
But if that's the line you want to land, you need to lay the groundwork for it. Like, again and again, he's been bullied by, you know, whether it's Simon Clarke or Lee Anderson or, you know, his own cabinet, whatever. Build that up. He's been bullied. I've changed my party. I've got rid of Jeremy Corbyn. You're being bullied by your... You can't just drop that in, anyway.
I just have to say, political Twitter really likes it. Not that that's a measure of quality, ever.
In fact, quite the opposite.
Well, because
they're the same people breathlessly saying Rishi Sunak was going to be gone by the end of the day last night.
Well, it's because they have all that knowledge at the forefront of their heads. If you're,
but he delivered it really badly. People aren't going to be replaying that in 30 years.
hopefully, we won't have televisions in 30 years.
We've had to sell them and eat them.
Luke Little has eaten all of them. Sorry, that was random.
All right, 8722, starting measure of the World Times. If you want to get in touch, if you've still got the will to live, let's go back to the House of Commons for the next word salad.
Mr. Speaker, there's only one party that crashed the economy. They're sitting right there. And
it's Lindsay Hall again.
You've had your question already. Obviously, you don't want to remain for the rest of it. Here's some.
He is Mr. 25 tax rises. And he's got nothing to say on childcare. Millions of families will have been listening for an answer and they got absolutely nothing. He announced that scheme a year ago, claiming it would get 60,000 parents back into work. Only on Monday of this week did he notice there were some, in his words, practical issues with that. 8 weeks before its launch, parents can't budget, plan for work, or make arrangements with their employers. And the Prime Minister's response is to say, it's all fine, it's the fault of the Labour Party. Is this merely a practical issue, or is it yet another example of him simply not understanding how life works for other people?
Mr. Speaker, we're delivering the biggest ever expansion of childcare in this country's history, Mr. Speaker. But while millions of parents will benefit from that, again, it's right that he should come clean with them about the cost that his plans will impose on all of them. He goes on and on about the Green Promise, Mr. Speaker. He says he wants to keep it. He says he wants to keep it, but he doesn't have a plan to pay for it. What he's really saying is he'll scrap the borrowing associated, but he wants to keep the £28 billion of spending. So for all those working families who are benefiting from our free childcare, he should come clean with them now. Why doesn't he come clean with them now? Come clean with them now and just be clear, his plans mean back to square one and higher taxes for British people.
I mean, all this reminds me. You remember we had Peter Dixon from The X Factor in? I think he basically just summed it up.
What a ruddy word salad.
I mean, I don't need to know what Keir Starmer's landing on childcare. Mm. And then being asked about childcare, Rishi Sunak's responding, talking about the Green Climate Fund.
Keir Starmer's questions are very long. What I will say about Rishi Sunak is that you can see a through line to his answers, which is Keir Starmer doesn't share your values. His policies will bankrupt the country. He won't tell you he'll put up your taxes, right? You can at least discern an argument there, even if you might think it's tenuous or you might think it doesn't bear any resemblance to the world in which most voters live. It is a sort of coherent political attack. I'm not really sure you can say the same of Keir Starmer's. I guess you could say, look, while you're messing around in Westminster, here's what's going on in the real world. But it's not particularly sharp.
Yeah. I suppose there's also a risk with this childcare thing, because it's only just coming in. If you bang on about it too much, what you're actually doing is advertising the government's massive expansion of childcare. Because, do you know what I mean? It's not a sort of existing thing, which it's not like rack concrete in schools or whatever, where it's a sort of culpability problem. You're just actually advertising that there are some teething troubles with the rollout of a major new expansion policy. I mean, obviously, you look at the polls, Labour 20 points ahead, maybe this stuff doesn't matter. But in the heat of a general election campaign, if the Labour Party can't form a coherent message on the day that a former cabinet colleague's called for the Prime Minister to resign and he's got in this pickle, yeah. And it goes to show the Tories are not going to go down without a fight, and they have got, they think, sufficient dirt and attacks on Keir Starmer to try and make it stick. Somebody just said, Harry in London says, PMQs used to be at least entertaining. They're trying to be as naff as possible so that people will decide to get rid of PMQs altogether. Well, what will Patrick McGuire and I do on Wednesday lunchtime if that happens?
Probably have lunch.
Could probably go for lunch.
Yeah, we could do.
Let's go back to the House of Commons then with a sense of grim inevitability. This is question number six from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, making steel workers redundant and failing to provide childcare is not a plan, Prime Minister. It's a farce. It's a farce. And he may soon discover that with childcare, there's an IT problem. Nurseries haven't got the spaces. They haven't got the staff. There's a black hole in their budget and it's 8 weeks to go. That isn't a plan. And families across the country, well, they can laugh all they like. Families are making plans now. They laugh at it, of course they do. Families are struggling with a cost of living crisis, trying to work out the household budget, balancing spiralling mortgages, prices and eye-watering bills. And then at the last minute, they're thrown into chaos because their nursery says they can't deliver the free childcare he promised. Now, he calls that a practical issue.
Quite long.
But I preferred the honesty of whichever of his colleagues briefed to the Times that it was, and I quote, a complete shit show. Who was it who briefed that to the Times? Hands up. Will the Prime Minister finally realise?
Well, obviously, I'd have to apologise.
I'll decide how long the question goes. Those who wish don't hear it, I've told you the answer, and I'll help you on the way. Keir Starmer.
When will the Prime Minister finally realise that the biggest practical issue facing Britain is the constant farcical incompetence of the government that he leads?
Yeah. Prime Minister, Mr Speaker, another week with no ideas, absolutely no ideas as a country, and absolutely no plan. He talked about the cost of living, Mr Speaker, he talked about the economy, but he never actually brings it up, and we all know why, Mr Speaker, because things are improving and we are making progress. Wages now rising, Mr Speaker, debt on track to be reduced, and inflation more than halved from 11% to 4%, because he actually knows that our plan is working and that his £28 billion tax grab will take Britain back to square one. And that, Mr Speaker, is the choice. It's back to square one and higher taxes with him, or a plan that's delivering a brighter future with the Conservatives.
Well, obviously, we'd like to begin by apologising for the potty mouth of the leader of the opposition. Is that a bit beneath the dignity of the man running to be Prime Minister?
I think it has to be used sparingly, and he's sworn twice in this session, which might be a little...
What was the other one?
I can't remember now.
Well, let's not repeat it. So this was a source in the Times, he was quoting, from the weekend, saying that September is going to be an absolute... show, a Whitehall source says, there's going to be parents that just don't get their places. I don't understand. Why is he trying to marry together
steel workers
and childcare? Just go on childcare. Loads of people are worried about it. There were kids, we talked to somebody with the Bernardo's earlier. There's a lobby of young people in Parliament today lobbying politicians.
I think what Team Starmer would say to that is, we are trying to make an argument about working people, be they steel workers in Port Talbot or working parents wherever. I mean, I can see what they were trying to do, but it wasn't particularly well done. The questions were very long. They reminded me a little bit of Jeremy Corbyn at his most prolix.
Yeah.
You know, they'll work well on social media when, you know, the kids are on the bus home vaping and watching Instagram reels of Keir Starmer smacking down Rishi Sunak. Anyway, enough about how I spend my evenings.
But it's an interesting question. I mean, Labour are 20 points ahead of polls. There's no getting away from that. In the heat of a general election campaign, a TV debate where, it, particularly if it was a head-to-head one, which apparently they're both committed to doing, if that was played out, if that sort of nonsense was played out in front of millions of people rather than however many people are watching, and people... lots of people seeing Keir Starmer for the first time. If he carries on like that, he will literally knock points off his...
No, exactly, exactly. And that is what some senior Labour people are worried about. The difficulty for Rishi Sunak, you know, as I've said a couple of times, his attack lines are well-honed. They are consistent, they're punchy. The problem is they bear no resemblance, or you can't advance those arguments as the leader of a party which is tearing itself apart, which was told to unite by its campaign manager last Monday and is now spending, you know, its days putting nonsense polling on the front page of the Daily Telegraph and calling for him to resign. So, oh, God.
Dave says, I wish he wouldn't swear, no need for it. I often watch this with my young son. He needs to up his game if he wants to be seen as a future PM. Doubt Blair would swear like that. There we are. Sunak can't answer the questions because he never listens, says John. If you want questions and answers, watch appearances before select committees. PMQs is Punch and Judy. It has been for years. There we are. Well, there we go. Laura, you have been watching the backbench contributions. Were they good?
They were amazing.
So good. So, so good.
Lots of references to dentistry and footpaths today.
Well, we were talking about dentistry only earlier with Robert and Alice. You know, there's a... If people thought they could get a dentist, that might, you know... improve matters.
I mean, this one was actually, it was from Tom Hunt, a backbencher. We're not doing it, but it was about whether or not dentists should be allowed to train under the NHS and then leave,
Scarpa.
Basically.
Yeah.
Do you think they should?
Well, it's an interesting question. And I know that there is frustration in government that their dentistry plans have not yet been brought forward. Mm. It's a slight feeling that Labour's stolen a march on talking about it, as have the Lib Dems, because they campaigned on it in the Somerton and Froome by-election, I think. There was a lot of dentistry content.
Is that enough of that? Should we go to what
who, we can.
Who are
we're
we
going
have?
To Stephen Flynn.
Of course we are.
As we always do, the SNP Westminster leader, who asks Rishi Sunak about Gaza, which is particularly relevant given given David Cameron, Lord Cameron's trip to the region starting today.
Mr. Speaker, last night, as Tory MPs were once again fighting amongst themselves, the public were sat at home watching John Irvine of ITV News report on footage from Gaza of an unarmed Palestinian man walking under a white flag, being shot and killed by the IDF. Prime Minister, such an act constitutes a war crime, does it not?
Mr. Speaker, we've been absolutely consistent that international humanitarian law should be respected and civilians should be protected. I've made that point expressly to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and the Foreign Secretary is in the region this week making exactly the same point.
Stephen Flynn.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom to rise to that dispatch box and tell the people of these isles and elsewhere that shooting an unarmed man walking under a white flag is a war crime. Now, in recent weeks, this House has acted with urgency and intent following an ITV drama. The question is, will this House now show the same urgency and intent following this ITV news report and finally back a ceasefire in Gaza?
Mr. Speaker, no one wants to see this conflict go on for a moment longer than necessary, and we do want to see an immediate and sustained humanitarian pause to get more aid in and, crucially, the hostages out, helping create the conditions for a sustainable ceasefire. I set out the conditions for that earlier in the House. The Foreign Secretary is in the region today and will continue to press all our allies and partners to make sure that we can bring about that outcome.
I mean, this is a reminder of like more serious things that are happening in the world. And this pretty extraordinary footage that ITV have got of the... And it's, you know, there's no doubting it. A group of men walking along holding a white flag, and then one of them was shot dead. And actually, it puts a focus on the fact, and, you know, David Cameron's meeting Benjamin Netanyahu today, that the fulsome support for Israel following the attack by Hamas, that's now been really tested by the actions of the Israeli government.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. And I think listening to Sunak there, the message, which sometimes can sound convoluted, which is talking about an immediate and sustained humanitarian pause that in turn would create conditions for a sustainable ceasefire, I think that will come under pressure when you're cited quite powerful examples, as you were then, from Flynn.
And Rishi Sunak having to sort of change gear, really, and actually engage properly in the question, Patrick.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's also interesting, the politics of that question. Not only do you have Rishi Sunak responding to it, as you say, soberly and not with a party political attack, it's difficult for Keir Starmer too. And I think that tells you how the SNP think a resurgent Labour Party in Scotland is vulnerable, i.e. on questions of foreign affairs, the SNP staking out a more dovish position. It's also notable, we may or may not hear it, but Tahir Ali, the left-wing Labour MP for Birmingham Hall Green, also speaking on Gaza in this session, said that Keir Starmer, that the UK should ban arms sales to Israel. So clearly you have an idea there of where people think Labour is vulnerable on its left.
Well, we'll see, because I imagine we'll hear from David Cameron after his trip to Israel, so we'll keep an eye on that throughout the day. Lara, what else did you caught your eye?
We are going to Jonathan Lord next, the Conservative MP. He has constituents who are victims of the Post Office scandal who are in the gallery today, who he references, and I think it's a reminder that while we're not quite in the biggest part of the storm with this scandal, the pressure on actually fulfilling the government's promises on this, I think, shouldn't be taken for granted or shouldn't be ignored.
The Post Office scandal has affected so many people, including my constituent, Seema Misra, a sub-postmaster from West Byfleet with an outstanding record of service to her community, who was wrongfully convicted in 2010 of stealing £75,000 and was sentenced to prison on her first son's birthday and whilst pregnant with her second son. Does the Prime Minister agree with me, and more importantly with Seema Misra herself, who is in the gallery today, with her husband, Devinda, that she is due a full apology from the post office, a full apology from Fujitsu, and proper compensation as a matter of urgency.
Yeah. And I know my honourable friend has been a great support to his constituents over all the years and has fought relentlessly for the truth to come out. As I've said, the Horizon scandal is one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in our nation's history. We will introduce, as I said a few weeks ago, primary legislation within weeks to ensure that all convictions that were based on erroneous Horizon evidence are quashed. That will clear people's names, deliver justice, and ensure swifter access to compensation. Innocent people, like my honourable friend's constituents, have waited far too long, and I'm determined that they receive compensation as swiftly as possible. We have a clear moral duty to right these wrongs, and that is exactly what we will do.
And normally you're not supposed to, this is a technical point, you're not supposed to refer to people in the gallery, but Keir Starmer, so you're not literally playing to the gallery, but Lindsay Hall obviously let that one go. And actually it's an example of MPs using pressure in at PMQs to keep the focus on this story, which is slightly at risk of dripping out of the news agenda again.
Yeah, and it was interesting that that question could have been posed in pretty similar form before that major announcement from the government. He didn't really reference any progress having been made by the government, despite obviously sitting behind Rishi Sunak on the Conservative benches. So I thought that was interesting that there wasn't even reference to there having been this big, bold promise. There was just a sense of there still being justice yet being delivered.
And actually, Rishi Sunak's response was a bit like the thing he said a couple of weeks ago.
Well, it's just a sort of boilerplate. It's all very sad. It's all very sad. Let's get going. I'm doing my sad voice. Incidentally, I think that's the first time I've ever heard Jonathan Lord speak. He's a very inconspicuous Tory backbencher. Never held any government job of any kind at all, despite being an MP since 2005. I've always wondered what he sounds like. There we go.
Well, thank you for that.
It's a dream fulfilled.
If nothing else, you've
I've made Patrick's day.
You've made Patrick's day.
It's a really high bar.
Patrick, you're gripping your phone. Are you being briefed?
Can I be completely honest with you?
Yeah.
I saw that it might be Burns night, so I was checking if they had haggis on in the terrace cafeteria, which they do.
It's Burns night tomorrow.
I know, but, well, they have haggis, neeps and tatties on in Parliament, which is what I'm going to do.
So in due course. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, Patrick. There was me thinking you might be on, you know... Team Starmer on the blower.
If only. Labour MP said they didn't watch PMQs. Someone whose judgment I trust. Civil servant says today's instalment of PMQs is funny. Matt Dathan just beat George Grills at Round the World in the Times Parliamentary Office dartboard.
Right, it's all happening.
Yeah.
It's all happening. Somebody else has got in touch and had a go at us, Patrick.
Have they?
Yeah. Here we are. Tim says, Matt, I think you're overanalyzing. Almost everyone else watching PMQ seems to think Starmer is destroying Sunak.
Well,
I think that might be a slight echo chamber of Twitter there. I mean,
judgment of the parliamentary press galleries.
Yeah, exactly.
Never unimpeachable.
Yeah, I still think the questions were too long, confused and badly delivered. But apart from that...
that was the play, Mrs. Lincoln.
Right, very good. Well, thank you very much, Lara Spitt. What time are you being people's inboxes?
3 p.m.
Time subscribers, you can get your PMQs unpacked email about 3:30.
That is
Lara
so
Spirit
unfair.
Will deliver that. Patrick McGuire, the rest of the afternoon, just a haggis and a nap.
Haggis and several high-level meetings.
Right, very good. Couple of naps. Well, that was PMQs Unpacked with Patrick McGuire and Lara Spirit. Let us know what you thought. You could email me, matt@times.radio, or find me on Twitter or X or Instagram or all of the platforms which haven't yet died.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else.
Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.